Welcome to Making Sense of MarTech, conversations with some of the most interesting people in the marketing tech industry. And it's the conversations that really matter to the future of this industry. Now, I'm Juan Mendoza, I'm your host. I'm the writer and the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter, covering the most important shifts in the marketing technology industry. So today we have Rohit Maheswaran. He's the co-founder and chief product officer of LifeSight, a marketing measurement platform offering a suite of attribution and mixed media modeling and incrementality tools. In this episode, we're tackling the shifting sands of attribution and how marketers are using different models and tools as the ways of last click and multi-channel attribution fade away with third-party cookies, and more marketers are embracing almost like a back to the future style of measurement using experimentation and MMM. Now, LifeSight is a company that's working at this forefront. They offer a variety of measurement tools within their platform, which is very unique. Most MarTech companies in the analytics space offer just a single methodology and they get very good at that. However, Rohit and his team have been able to master a variety of methodology and offer almost like a Swiss Army knife of different analytics frameworks and formats for marketers to really embrace and use as they test and experiment and see what works for them. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how marketers are shifting away from what we've known in the past to new ways of measurement and attribution and incrementality. So without further ado, I'm going to give you Rohit Maheswaran. Rohit, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you? Great to be here.
Oh, look, it's great to have you here. We've been on a few podcasts together now and for different shows and different contexts, and it's great to meet you again. I've always found that you're such a clear thinker in terms of this space and attribution analytics. It's wonderful to see the work that you're doing in the industry. But I know you're also an entrepreneur. You're the co-founder of LifeSight. Now, LifeSight, very quickly growing marketing tech company, relatively new on the scene. But before we dive into this topic of measurement and analytics, I want to ask about your story a little bit. You're an entrepreneur. You've been building tech for years. You know this the ways of the entrepreneur quite a bit. But what has been perhaps one of the most challenging moments in your career building technology as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a great question. As all entrepreneurs would probably tell you, there has to be a lot of failures before you actually succeed. And yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges in the early days when we first started, so I've been doing this for now, entrepreneurial journey has been almost 20 years now. Started off in the agency side of things, so servicing a lot of clients in the media and marketing space. So truly understood the pain points of these folks, started doing web design, and then moved on to mobile apps in the late 2000s, and then started building SaaS, and more recently data companies, right, such as LifeSight. And I think through all those journeys, there's been several failures, right? So that's definitely one of the biggest, most challenging moments is the fact that you have to shut down a company and fire everyone. You know, these are all people who depend on their salaries, their families depend on it, and they trust you to kind of lead and to be able to give them that, right? And yeah, so definitely the most painful part of taking those risks is when you make the wrong decisions along the way, and you run out of money, or you fail to sell your product, you are stuck in this horrible position of having to, you know, let go of people, and then eventually having to shut down the company. And it's essentially like a baby that you worked on for so long, and them just having to just stop that, you know, randomly, and in essence move on to the next thing, right? But persistence is always key, right? I always believe that sometimes things just don't work out. Sometimes, like in many cases, I was a bit too early to the market with the product, you know, trying to go too high tech too fast, and all of those decisions actually caused a lot of the startups to shut down before this.
So I guess my question to you is, have you worked or founded a startup that failed? And what was that experience like?
Many of them. Yeah. So this LifeSight is actually startup number 5 for me.
Oh, wow.
So there's been several companies before this. I have failed multiple times. And so, majority of it is because we fail to monetize fast enough. So obviously in the agency business, it was very clear, right? At early days, no funding, you just kind of go at it, and as you service your clients, you get paid, you know, and then you use that money to expand, right? And improve your services, hire better people. But then when you started moving into the product space, you have to invest that money upfront and build a product that someone would buy.
Mm.
But eventually after that, selling becomes easier, right? So if you are not able to sell the product and not able to monetize it in time, that's when cash flow becomes a problem without funding, and then that shuts down as well, right? Later part of my career, I definitely focused on getting some funding upfront so that we had a chance to actually build the product. And thankfully, we have investors that are still with us today for the past decade now. And in essence, that has really helped us build very strong products and be able to then test that product market fit very quickly. But the one big lesson out of this is we definitely learned to not rely on investors' money to essentially build product market fit, right? Really go out there, prove that you can be profitable upfront. And that has proven to be super valuable for the experience that I have today in ensuring that we can run, operate today without any funding. And be able to stay profitable while growing the company, right?
Mm. Yeah, that is actually really interesting, that dynamic, because you're right. With consultancies, you can go out tomorrow, start sending out pitch decks and prospectus, and then money comes to the door. But yeah, you may spend 12 months or 2 years or sometimes even 10 years building a technology product that just has no utility, or it just has no value to customers, or you get your marketing wrong. This is like a billion variables that can go wrong in any startup, and any one of them can really impact that journey and lead to ultimately having to close doors, you know? Yeah, so absolutely. So I think you're right. Like that personal challenge is also really exciting, you know? Have you ever done any digging into like why you really enjoy entrepreneurship? Because it's not for everyone. I mean, it's so much easier to be an employee where all the risk is taken away. You get a nice salary. It's consistent. You earn money, you know? You don't have to work so hard. Like, I mean, why? Why work so hard on building new companies? Why are you in this type of business?
No idea, actually. I think it's just the entrepreneurial spirit. From day one, I've always wanted to, you know, very ambitious, wanted to solve a big problem, always trying to solve the biggest problems in the world with the product. And yeah, trying to make it in the world, right, in essence. So yeah, never saw myself as working for anyone. And so definitely... right out of uni, just started a business and went at it. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I should say then congratulations, because that is there's a real story of persistence and determination and that a willingness to be wrong and to make massive mistakes as well. So you know, kudos to you, mate. That's really great, and it's encouraging as well. Yeah.
Nowadays it's easier than ever to become an entrepreneur. So I wish I had all of those resources that we do nowadays, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's a great time for entrepreneurship because the technology's here, the access to audiences are here. You know, there is just unlimited opportunities right now. It's a real world of abundance, I think, particularly in marketing, because you've just got so many options available to you. You really do have the very best of the best technologies and tools and people that can grow amazing brands and amazing companies very quickly. Not many gatekeepers these days to building a great company. So I agree with you. Now is historically one of the best times to explore with a journey into entrepreneurship. So now we've covered entrepreneurship. All the entrepreneurs listening to this podcast, you can shut down the app and you can just press pause, because we're going to shift into analytics and attribution. Now, you know, this area of domain of marketing is just one of those spaces that's been constantly roiled by change. You know, privacy change, third-party cookie deprecation, Apple tracking transparency. The list goes on of things that are really just harming and damaging the ability for marketers just to have clarity around what's going on with their campaigns. Are they getting the outcomes that they desired from those campaigns? Where's the marketing budget going, right? And I look at that and it's just been a lot of change in the industry. But Rohit, you've been building technology in this space for a while now. I want to get a view from you. What is your view? What's the landscape view of why analytics and marketing is changing? Why is it changing and why now?
Yeah, so I think first of all, we really need to acknowledge that marketing measurements or analytics has never been perfect, right? Over the years, from the time advertising and marketing activity started, it's always been an estimate. It's been a probabilistic way of doing things, right? And in essence, the marketer is supposed to make an educated guess to what's actually working, and just using correlation methods, right, and models such as attribution. And that really took off once digital advertising came into play, right? So with the advent of social media, mobile apps, and all of that, in essence, everyone relied on individual level tracking to essentially, you know, gauge what is working and what's not working, right? Mm-hmm. And so that obviously coupled with the ad platforms of the world, giants that are where they are today because of that, in essence, is like put a dollar in and get five out kind of approach, was very clear to a marketer, right? Like, this is how I'm going to grow my business. And till today, it works, right? And of course, you have more advanced marketers doing a lot of analysis, doing their own attribution modeling and stuff like that. But in essence, it's not perfect, and it's extremely flawed, right? From day one, analytics has been a flawed thing. Attribution has been a flawed thing, purely from the fact that it's been correlation-based, right? And in essence, saying that one thing happened because of another thing, just direct matching it, is not the way, it's not the true sense of what actually happened in the advertising world, right? And so then this was all continued for what we call the golden era of tracking, right? So from early 2010s right up to 2018, you saw this ability to just grow with digital advertising, right? And of course, then measurements was happening in silos as well. So TV happened in its own world. You get a report from the TV station or TV channel or whatever, right? Media companies. And then Facebook is reporting to you separately. And even then, the marketing teams themselves were siloed, right? Mm. And then the email guys and own channel marketing is doing their own thing. And then things like influencer marketing and all this measured separately as well. So extremely disjointed, extremely not cohesive, and very flawed in that sense, right? And so the reason why what shook the entire market was this privacy first movement, right? And in essence, ever since 2018, when GDPR first came out and said you have to put a cookie banner and start getting people to opt in to being, data to be collected, that's mm-hmm. what started the movement, right? But until today, it's still continuing, right? Like, essentially, tracking just continued how it always been done. Mm-hmm. And what really put a dent in the market is the folks like Apple, right? And coming from a device level, browser level, coming and saying, no, you can't track these IDs, only if the customer opts in, and so on and so forth. So that really changed the market, right? And why that has changed the market is because this the marketers have never had this limitation before, right? It's yep. been continuing, and next, what I'm hearing is IP addresses are on the chopping block as well.
Yeah.
And so identity. Yeah, absolutely. So even that is going to be affected, right? And so this is where I think the privacy first movement is going to essentially change attribution-based modeling, attribution-based measurements, and put more probabilistic modeling approaches in the forefront, right? And into the limelight again. It was working fine before. Advertising worked fine before Google and Facebook, right? It actually is very effective, and marketing mix modeling worked fine before that. But the shift to digital kind of put it in the back seat, right? And really kind of brought attribution to the forefront of the measurement stack. And now it's kind of attribution will take the back seat, and then the more probabilistic models and approaches, more causal based models and approaches would take the front seat, right? So yeah, so that's where we see the change happening.
So would you say that the reason why marketers are ditching last click attribution and other types of sort of direct attribution methods is because of privacy reasons?
Or is there more to it? Yeah, there's more to it, right? It's definitely one of the main points, right? They can see that not all data points are being collected. The numbers don't add up on their dashboards, right? Mm-hmm. Facebook is saying one thing, Shopify account is saying another thing, Google is saying another thing, yeah. And they're pulling their hair out trying to figure out what's actually working, right? Yeah. And it's just completely disjointed, but it's still continuing as it is, right? Because that's all that is available. That's all that they know.
Yeah.
I think the other point is the fact that they want to be privacy compliant, right? They want to be able to use methodologies that are privacy compliant, and that's a big move and shift as well, right? So larger companies are definitely exploring and have been doing a lot of modeling work in the past, and now it's just coming to the limelight, right? Yeah.
So the way I see it is that a lot of the shifts in the analytics space for marketing has been reactive. It's not as though there's new technologies coming out and we're like going, wow, we're getting strength to strength to strength, better and better and better, more and more clarity. It seems actually the story is the opposite of that, where Apple and Google and the major tech players are shutting things down. More world governments are regulating data collection and tracking.
Yeah.
And so it seems as though we're in a period of being very challenged, as opposed to in other industries. For example, take generative AI, just goes from strength to strength to strength. It's just like, oh, it's amazing, right? And other things like composability in the MarTech stack, amazing. The amount of startups in, you know, that are building solutions to directly integrate a warehouse, just strength to strength to strength. It's just kind of this inflection point. Whereas it seems to me like analytics attribution, there's not an innovation trigger. It's actually it's almost like an ethical trigger against the ways that we've done things in the past.
Yeah, I think it all boils down to the fact that attribution relies heavily on individual level tracking, right? And all the systems, all the tools out there are made based on that, right? And so until today, people are still trying to fix the problem by, you know, just putting a plaster on a huge problem, right? And they're trying to use all kinds of methods, right? Let's move GA4 data to BigQuery. Let's try to use data clean rooms. Let's try to do all of the different methods, but it still boils down to the same problem, which is it's individual level tracking. And once an individual is not being able to be tracked, or signals are lost, you just can't arrive at an accurate outcome, right? And so, yeah, so this is where I think while it still works, right, it's not gone completely. I think there will be a certain percentage of the population who consents tracking, and that's fine, right? And we are able to make some sense of the data and some sense of the insights that come out of measurements, but marketers need to start adopting these new methodologies and really putting it into their toolkit in order to get to triangulate to the real sense of what actually worked, right? Yeah.
So is there, in your view, given that obviously you're building technology for this next iteration, next phase of analytics attribution, what's your lens on innovation then? Is this reaction to privacy, ethics, and then the unilateral moves by big tech players, all of that, is that creating an environment where there can be a lot of innovation? Or
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are right at the start of this movement, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much in its infancy, where even folks like Meta and all are starting to acknowledge, right? We are Meta business partners, and we basically started working with them to do experimentation, all of that, right? For the brands. And in essence, they've started to just stop fighting the change, right? And start adopting new techniques within the measurement stack. And so they're definitely driving it forward. Google research, Microsoft research, they've pushed the boundaries when it comes to doing AI-based modeling on top of the data, right? So using historical aggregated data, and then of course using the scientific method of experimentation and pushing that forward as well, right? And so
So I guess my question to you then is, if we strip away all of the pressures, everything we just talked about. And you said, okay, you get to be the regulator, the enforcer, and the creator of an analytics attribution measurement landscape for marketers, right? So what would be that ideal world in your view? Like, what would be to give marketers the maximum clarity over what their efforts are, their outcomes, their depth of insights into their customers so they can learn more and serve them better? You know, the ability to go and ask for more money in a business, which of course analytics has a huge role in asking for budgets and proving the value. What would be your ideal world? What would that look like for you?
So in an ideal world, essentially, it's like having ChatGPT for measurements, right? In essence, it's running off a large language model that's super complex, super advanced, but it gives you the results in a right at your fingertips, right? And so that's an ideal world, right? Where you use AI, you use your first party data, you use it in a compliant and aggregated manner, anonymized manner, and you'll still be able to make very critical decisions, fully supported and enabled by AI, right? And it's never been a better time to do this because there's all these cloud processing capabilities and all these super advanced models that very, very smart people in the world have worked on, and it's now democratized, right? Anyone can get access to it. Just go to GitHub and search for an open source project, and you have a ton of it at your fingertips, ready to go and build into your daily activities, right? And of course, the biggest problem behind this is the fact that you still need a data engineer, a data scientist, or a machine learning engineer to kind of run it and tweak it and fine-tune it. This is where folks like ourselves come into play, where we're trying to simplify it for the non-technical marketer. Just having that ability to make decisions at their fingertips, is something that an ideal world would be like, right? Because that's all they want to arrive at, right? Yeah. So in many cases, we get a lot of brands getting super confused by all the AI talk, right? Like marketing mix modeling and this and all of that. And they just don't get it, like how it works and how do they tell their bosses that it works, right? And how to trust that data or the outcomes. And in essence, what we tell them is, yeah, you don't think about that, right? The outcome is decisions, right? And so
That's
that's what we're trying to arrive at. So recommendations and all of that.
awesome.
So yeah, that is the ideal world. And it's
Is
here.
that there's a real like there's like a real empirical aspect to this, which is like when it comes to marketing, the closest you can get to reality of your position in as a marketer is the analytics, is the outcomes. It's the
Yeah,
it's then the way
exactly.
you arrive at those.
Yeah.
It's the closest you have to reality in terms of your effectiveness.
Exactly. So I
Sure.
think
Yeah.
what marketers measure today is very what we call vanity metrics, right? Designed for the marketer in a way. What's my return on ad spend, right? When actually the real answer should be, what's my incremental sales driven by marketing, right? And so this is where we're trying to make that shift, right? Trying to ensure that a business outcome is a sustainable and profitable business, as opposed to I just got more sales because I ran ads, right?
Yeah, that's right. But here's the thing, like getting a lens on reality is extremely hard to do in any discipline. Take
Absolutely.
academia, right? Like think of the history of academia and particularly the scientific domain, where they're collecting empirical data to understand the world. You look at that intellectual, like global intellectual tradition and history, which continues to evolve, right? Scientists still get things wrong all the time. And
Absolutely.
we're always like our brains are like Bayesian probability calculators. Like, oh, how true is this? How false is this? We're always determining what's true, updating our view of reality of the world based
Absolutely.
on the data we're getting in. And the interesting thing about marketing is that empirical pursuit, that pursuit to figure out what is true and what's not true, is not just inquiry, which you have in academia. You just it's literally inquiry, like how close can we get to knowing if something's true or not? How much can we apply hypothesis, to use more technical words? But in marketing, it's like if the numbers say something and it means that my job is done here, like in terms of I'll be fired, right? I've torched $500,000, which happens all the time. I've torched $500,000 on a completely wrong segment, completely wrong ideas, completely wrong marketing, just complete failure, right? So marketers' livelihoods and their role in their company and their mobility, their progression has a lot riding on that empirical pursuit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think about that a lot, in that unlike other disciplines, marketers have real commercial ties and incentives to analytics beyond just an empirical pursuit for knowledge and truth.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, that's where I think this new methods are going to help the marketer, right? Because as opposed to just seeing those numbers and just looking at dashboards and trying to figure out what works and how much money came in, you truly can prove your marketing ROI, right? And so with this new, so obviously, like I mentioned, we need to move towards more causal-based approaches, right? Truly understand what's causing the change in your KPIs is a super powerful, it's a superpower, right? In essence. And so being able to ask very difficult what if questions, right? Is something that causal-based approaches can do, right? So what if I started my BFCM campaign 2 months ago instead of 1 month ago, right? And what's the true incremental impact of that going to happen, going to be on my end KPI? And so giving that superpower to the marketer is going to make them more accountable, make them be able to then measure all of that impact back into the feedback loop, right? And truly understand what their decision performance is as opposed to marketing performances, right? And so, yeah, that's where I see the world moving to and how marketers are going to be having more capabilities than ever before.
Well, I do think that there is a very interesting discussion to be had about how marketers create a sense of reality of the real impact they're making in businesses through analytics. Yeah. And it is fascinating to me that most companies will pitch their products and solutions to find the ROI and boost your outcomes and, you know, get the increases that you want, right? Yeah. Which is like, I think the most brilliant marketers I've come across, the ROI question, of course, is important, but what is far more important than that is getting that empirical sense of reality. Because that enables the decision-making for good, bad, or ugly. And it gives them a view on the world that satisfies their curiosity as well. But it is interesting. But I want to talk a bit about, because I mentioned earlier that, you know, this shift into different methodologies in analytics measurement are actually, it's almost like back to the future in the sense that a lot of these tools, MMM and others, geolocation, experimentation, well, this has been around for a while now. I mean, and LifeSite's kind of really investing in these methodologies as the future, as a big bet. Now, I do want to understand because I guess let's talk about MMM for a minute. Maybe you could unpack what MMM is and why is it so attractive to marketers? Why are they embracing it?
Yeah, I think for many years now in the digital space, everything has been run by attribution, right? And in essence, a digital marketer could very confidently make those decisions, right? And MMM has always been essentially a statistical modeling technique that uses historical aggregated data to essentially predict the future, right? And decide where you're going to put your next budgets. And of course, then done by typically statisticians, data scientists, folks who are, you know, sitting in a consulting company, doing it for a much larger brand who's spending millions and millions across the world. It's typically always been only available to folks like that. But with the advent of AI, as well as then cloud services and SaaS, the ability for someone to now be able to use those same advanced models is something that is coming to light, right? And because of the inability for attribution to accurately help a marketer distribute their budgets, especially across online and offline channels, right? Not just looking at online alone. If a brand is big enough and they need to be able to optimize their budgets accurately, that's where MMM shines, right? And the ability to do that in the easiest way possible, which is just integrating all of your data, which is more available than ever before, as well as then use other external data that is widely available as well to essentially build a model that's custom to you and be able to then predict where you should be allocating your budgets, right? And so, yeah, so that's why it's becoming a very popular tool. In many cases, you're not only trying to increase, you're not only trying to maintain your budget and improve outcomes, but you're also trying to scale, right? You're trying to scale and say at which point does a channel get saturated, right? And so that ability to push it right up to the edge before you start wasting money on the channel is something that MMM can solve as well, right?
Yeah. That's That's really great. And I can, I've used other MMM in the past. I used, I think it's Robin, which is the Meta Robin platform, which is an open source MMM. You can sort of download it and, you know, and what it kind of gives you is probabilities, right? It'll give you like forecasting on where you should spend based on a variety of variables.
Yes.
Maybe you could help us understand a little bit, like what kind of data points go into an MMM model and why?
Yeah, I essentially you're trying to take an, every last data point that is potentially going to influence the sale, right? Mm-hmm. And so the MMM model is taking into it and it's gauging that influence of that particular activity, whether paid or not, and it's able to then accurately see how that influenced the sale using your historical data, right? Or how did it impact the KPI, right? Not just on revenue, could be a number of orders, could be on store visits, and so on, right? And so in essence, the first data set that is always required or a compulsory data set is the your advertising spend data, right? So being able to get an aggregated spend data across all channels, right? That's number one. And the second compulsory or mandatory data is the, your KPI data, right? So let's say sales, right? On a daily or weekly level. And then, of course, you have all the other optional data, which is essentially your organic data, right? So your YouTube views, your organic YouTube views, all of the click data across impressions and clicks across all the channels. Yep. And then some other variables that could be, right? Did you, was there an event? Did you run a product launch event? Or maybe did you have, how many coupon redemptions do you have in the store? Or even, how many people clicked on an email, for example, right? All of those inputs can be put into the model. And in essence, the model is built to understand all of these inputs and essentially churn out a prediction and with a certain level of accuracy, after which then you can decide based on your analysis whether or not the model is suitable for you. And then you adopt it and test it, validate it by allocating the recommended budgets that it gives you for each of the channels that you're running the campaign on, right? Yeah.
So all of that work is something that you wouldn't run. Would you run it as an automated program, or would you run it in points of time, like before a campaign or after a campaign? Like, how does it work in the practice of using an MMM in a business concurrently?
So in the current in traditional way, it was a point in time project, right? So someone like in a consulting company would take it for a CPG company, for example, and they would run it for the start of late in the year so that they can plan for the future year's budget, right? And across all the different channels, right? But with this ability to now be more dynamic, right? There's tons of data coming in from all these different channels. We are able to then very quickly put it into the model using essentially a cloud environment, right? And run it and then let the marketer essentially use it and run different scenarios, right? And figure out what would be their next plan of action. Mm. And so they can even do this at a shorter period, right? So ideally, an MMM model should also be refreshed within a certain period as well. So typically the buyer's journey, right? So from the time they saw the ad right up to the time buying cycle happens. So that's where this dynamic capability of this type of approach to this modern MMM is what's going to essentially improve it, right? And be able to then, most importantly, run experiments after that in order to gauge the impact, the actual ground truth of what actually happened, right? After you've allocated your budgets. And then using that incremental live data to calibrate the MMM model as well, right? So and tell the MMM model, this is what happened, right? This is the truth. And is in essence now, whatever you predict in the future, take this into account before you predict, right?
So there's all of this work that you need to do, right? So you need to get the data in there. You need to run it concurrently. You need to obviously stress test it against experimentation. Mm-hmm. That seems like a lot of moving pieces and parts. Yeah. Now, before we hit record, I was asking you about your gold star customer, the best customer, right? Mm-hmm. We won't name them. But I would love to get a view from you, I guess, the customers that are really effective at this. What does their team look like? Like, who's actually working on it? Who's responsible for the outputs? Who's responsible for collecting the data and feeding it in? You know, what does that makeup of a team tend to look like that is more successful in using MMM and experimentation?
Yeah, so when it came to our attribution product, right, it is always the end user who's making those granular optimizations, right? So you have your performance marketer or your media buyer trying to figure out what's happening there. But what we're seeing now is marketing operations leads essentially leveraging the tool, right?
Okay.
So in essence, folks who are essentially in charge of bringing all their marketing data and putting together the dashboards and truly trying to connect, be that connective tissue between finance teams and marketing teams and all of that.
Yeah.
And that's where we see the true value of this tool being used, right? So because it's where decisions are made, right? Or at least proposals for decisions to be made by the executive team.
Yeah. Right?
And so, yeah, so that's where we see the tool evolving to be highly insights and recommendations based as opposed to dashboards, right? And they can run scenarios and simulations of all different marketing outcomes and as well as then actions they need to take in order to achieve those outcomes. And then to be able to then make the decisions and then measure the traction of those decisions, right? All in one single place. So that's where we see it moving, yeah.
So the marketing ops function makes a lot of sense, I think, because they've got a handle on the data. They've been both in foots in both camps, right? The strategic view on like the outcomes of the creative and also the data analytics world. You kind of need that both end, but it is very surprising to hear you say that that's one of the more successful aspects of the customers using your platform. So that's really fascinating. But I wanted to ask you about, I guess we're moving from different models and different methods. Now, does this change the questions marketers are asking to their data and what kind of things they're analyzing?
So, yeah. So I think one of the biggest shifts in terms of questions is, I mean, what attribution can answer is very limited, right?
Yeah.
And of course, then other media forms like TV and all of that, they don't even answer any questions. They just tell you what the result was, right? And
yes.
So the change in the way that things are happening is to be able to use some of these tools to answer more questions, right? And marketers have tons of questions and tons of decisions to be made. And so instead of just saying that, yeah, I should be spending more on a particular channel because it's giving a certain number of return on ad spend, it will say, how much more can I spend on this channel, right? And how much incremental sales would I get from that, right? Or can I reduce my budget and still maintain my revenue, right? Which type of segments of customers who are really driving that incremental revenue, you know? What type of campaigns are really giving me profits, profitable sales, right? So combining these models with some of the first-party data and other channels as well, not just having it from a single view of paid ads, driving that end outcome, having more cohesive measurement strategy, I think it's allowing these different questions to be asked, right? And it's really opening up that question bank, right? And not just thinking from a single point of view. Yeah.
Okay. So I think that there's something there to say. Well, I guess my big challenge with it is that, I guess, with last click attribution and the multi-channel attribution type methodologies, which, as you say, relied on the individual user, you can get really granular with that. You can go, what's their characteristics? Yeah. What's their demographic? How many pages on the website did they visit? You get this sort of profile view of the behaviors that build up over time in terms of what leads to conversions and revenue and what doesn't. Now, with these new tools, it doesn't seem like you can get that granularity anymore.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So one of the things that why we still have to use attribution, one of the main reasons is because of that, right? That ability to really see on a creative level, right? What is driving or what's working, right? And so that granularity, I think, is something that is definitely to be desired in a probabilistic model, right?
Yeah.
But it is possible to still do some level of modeling on that as well, right? And so we do have some techniques to do it on an attribution side of things, because for the longest time, we were only able to collect impression data, for example, like individual level impression data from programmatic channels, right? As opposed to like, and of course, Facebook and Google, that's a black box for everybody, right? But in essence, we need that level of data to really see what's driving it, right? Because we can't just measure clicks, for example. Mm-hmm. So all in all, definitely attribution gives a sense of performance on a granular level, and you can still do daily optimizations, right? So what we call campaign optimizations on an ad set level or whatever it might be, a strategy, a tactic level. And so that's always going to be there, but I think it's still diminishing, right, at the end of the day. And I think that there will be ways to run some of these models and in a probabilistic way on a granular level as well, right? Yeah,
well, I hope so. I mean, this is the challenge, is that how much of the privacy stuff is really a problem, you know? I mean, brands should be learning from their customers and what they're up to. I mean, you know, in the same way that a shop assistant would watch someone walk across the aisles in a shoe store, you know, they walk in and you're seen, you're known that you're in that location, that you're shopping for things. Or maybe you're more taken to these types of shoes as opposed to other types of shoes, right? All that stuff is information is freely given in any physical context. Now, you apply that to a digital context. It is a conundrum, because you go, yes, you know, brands could actually improve their services, improve their prices and products purely by virtue of just understanding what customers gravitate towards and getting those insights directly.
Yeah.
But on the other side, when you build that up in aggregate, then you start having a problem, because then you get profiling a lot of people, and then it's an invasive and it can feel like a violation of privacy.
Yeah.
Still, like, I feel like we haven't, as a society, we haven't really figured out the path out of that just yet. I just don't think we really figured out what's right and what's wrong, what's clear and what's not clear. And how do we actually put a place within analytics and an ethical framework? But it is good. And speaking about that, well, you know, we've talked a lot today about how privacy and data is kind of changing this landscape of analytics. But what are you excited about in this new future? And you can't say the next funding round for LifeSite, okay? Please leave that out. But what I'm after is you personally.
Yeah.
Given that you're staking quite a bit of your career on this technology and
for sure.
And the future, what are you really optimistic about?
So I think from this shift that's happening in the industry, I think one of the most powerful thing that is coming out of this is that we are right at that part in history where AI is really taking off, right? In a big way. It's democratized, right? People are aware of it now. People are aware of the power, and it's more powerful than ever, right? And so I'm most excited about this, right? Where tools like causal AI or methodologies like causal AI is really taking off. And I think the innovators and researchers in the space truly going to change the way that people start making marketing decisions, right? And so that's what I'm truly excited for. I'm also excited for this convergence of ad tech and martech, right? Everyone's speaking about it. It's kind of happening in a way. This ability for marketers to work across the full funnel and truly work towards the single goal, and having this cohesive measurement stack that is not disjointed and not... And decisions are not made in silos, right? And so I think combining both of these kind of technologies, like causal AI, as well as then this convergence, this I guess industry trends are going to essentially see a world where decision making is actually fully automated, right? And so that's what I'm excited about, and that's where we're working towards. And it's already happening in some shape or form in within the ad platforms as well. If you notice, you know, things like PMAX and Advantage Shopping campaigns are just saying, yeah, just put a budget in and we will make it happen, right? Same way, you know, you tell what outcomes, what KPIs do you want to achieve, and what is your budget, and we are able to then recommend and tell you exactly what you need to do, and then track all of those decisions and put it back into this feedback loop. and able to then fine-tune all of these actions over time using a proper causal-based approach as opposed to just individual level tracking and stuff like that, right? So I think I'm most excited for that and that ability to for anyone to use that tech and not just large companies who are already doing it at massive scale. That ability to democratize that and make it available to the masses, right? That's what drives me and gets me up every day.
Yeah, and I think that the main word, and I think that I also agree with you, I'm very optimistic about, is a democratization. Now, I think that the black box concept of like performance max with Google is a great example of this. Is like, just feed in the, give us a budget, give us the ad sets, and then we'll optimize it for you. And magically, you just get all the ROI, right?
Yeah.
You can definitely see a future in which that just happens, where marketers have like no agency. They literally have no power in that situation. And that's exactly what Google wants to do. Like the privacy changes, although it's wreaking a lot of havoc for Google, it's also a huge advantage for them because they've got all the proprietary first-party data. So they can go, hey, you know, we can collect the data, we've got it, and then we can use that to optimize your campaigns. And by the way, if you move away from us, then you lose, you know, huge amounts of revenue and growth because fully dependent on our AI system, you don't get to know what it is about. You don't even understand its technology. You have no control over it, but your business is reliant on it for growth. Now, that seems more dystopian than utopian, to be frank with you. I would say that what LifeSite is doing is very interesting, is that, as you say, it's democratizing. You know, you can get away from those platforms, independently verify the results of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it gives, like, in my view, that I think that the future should trend towards more agency and control for marketers, not less.
Yes.
We don't no one wants to work in a performance marketing role where literally all they're doing is pushing green buttons all day.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, that's not what people want to come to work and do.
Yeah.
But somehow,
not to mention the creatives don't have to be created anymore, right? Exactly. Google will tell you what is working.
But there's a lot of creativity in performance marketing. There's a lot of joining the dots. It's connecting the insights from the what you're learning from your campaigns to inform the next big idea. It's taking bigger risks. It's staying up late and building out an awesome campaign and shipping it and making a huge impact, right? That's why people work in this industry, And so I think that that's what I'm most optimistic about. More technology platforms that help marketers have more control and say over what is actually going on in this ad tech ecosystem. And of course, to get the insights so they can make better decisions. And so on that positive note, that was Rohit Maheswaran. He's the chief product officer and the co-founder at LifeSite. Really interesting platform. They're also in the MarTech Weekly TMW 100 awards program. They did very well, coming in 21st place. So congratulations for that. At 100, beating out some of the biggest names in the marketing technology industry. So congratulations. There's some fantastic things underway for LifeSite, and really just a wonderful discussion and a real, almost a philosophical discussion about the future of data and analytics and how marketers could be really taking the opportunities right now and getting better insights. So one last question for you, Rohit, before we head away, is where can we actually have more of these discussions with you? Where can we find you online and where can we find LifeSite?
So you can just search for LifeSite on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's where we're most active. And you can find me at Rohit Ma on LinkedIn and Twitter as well. So that's Rohitmah. Feel free to DM me and we can have a conversation.
Okay, well, definitely check out Rohit. His social media links are in the show notes if you want to go check out what Rohit's up to in the marketplace. But again, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Juan. Great talking to you again.